Welcome to Cloudlandia. Mr. Sullivan.
Mr. Jackson, Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year from Cloudlandia.
Yeah.
Here we are. We're in we're on the mainland, are you today?
Yeah, I'm in Toronto.
Okay.
We just chilled. We just basically chilled.
Yeah,
we were traveling a lot in November, and we'll be the same in January and February. So decided to, you know, it's been very nice. I mean, we had the storm, not much of one here. It was about 4 or 5 inches. Clearly, the fault of some variation on global warming.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, yeah. The, I think cause number 89 or something like that. You know, they have a lot of different causes. But Buffalo got hammered.
It's all combustible.
Buffalo always gets the worst because they have the, they're at a weird configuration. They're right at the eastern end of Lake Ontario and the southern end of, well, southern end of Lake Ontario and eastern end of Lake Erie. And there's a weird thing that dumps 6 or 7 feet on them.
Oh, man, I know. I often remember that, like, thinking, you know, the two things that always stuck out of my mind about Buffalo is, first of all, the fires. Because if you watch
in
the
Tonawanda.
News, there's a fire in Tonawanda.
In Tonawanda.
I think it's just, I think that was because it was fun to say, fire in North Tonawanda. Till about 11.
Yeah. Yeah, and
isn't
then
that
the
funny, we both share that storm realization.
Yeah, I don't think anyone else in the United States, Alaska, they might, but not in the mainland. I think that Buffalo gets the worst of it when they have those sort of storms. And you know, it is what it is. I mean, those sort of things happen. And but you know, it's been happening forever, so it's not something recent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that was
You know, the thing what people, you know, there's just a couple of factors that don't take people into consideration. You know, first of all, storm damage. Well, you know, when the population was one third as great as it is right now, when I was born, it was about a third of what it is right now. You didn't have that many things to damage, you know, from the storm. Okay, so, and the other thing is the number of people who are now reporters and journalists and commentators, and that's truly exponential. That's truly grown exponentially.
I think you're right. It's almost like every person, how many people now are online? That is it up to 5 billion yet of
no,
the number of
I
people
think it's,
with
you know four yeah it might 4 billion half the global population might be higher. I mean, who does count on this? You know, is there a is there a meter?
I mean,
is there a meter somewhere that's just crossed five. We just crossed 5 billion. Yeah. It was a little boy. boy in one of those Indian Ocean islands.
Oh, I lost count again. Start over. 1, 2, 3, 4. No, but the point is that there's 3 or 4 billion people all over the globe. There's probably no corner of the globe that's not covered with access to, you know, satellite or, you know, being a direct link to Cloudlandia. And so you've got now 3 or 4 billion people with an instant satellite uplink and a video camera. Everybody's a news crew. That the as soon as that fire breaks out in Tonawanda, you've got the closest person with their cell phone is the one
people in South Africa
reporting.
People in South Africa know about it.
Yeah, and all of a sudden it's trending on Twitter, like the dispatch center. The you know the British are coming. The British are coming. that way of getting the message out is super fast now. And you look at that, that I think is reflected in how quickly ChatGPT got to, you know, its first however many million.
And it's an emotional and psychological multiplier. you know, those emotions get multiplied by this, you know. I mean, yeah, and I've really noticed the drop off inside of me of that being affected by that multiplier since I'm in my fifth year now with no television and just not tuning in every day lessens the force of people's emotional overwhelm in the world, because that's what gets reported on is outbreaks of emotional overwhelm.
Yeah, I was doing some reflecting yesterday and realized I've been kind of observing the, you know, the dopamine effect of, you know, constantly being hooked in to the matrix. You know, like I do, if I look at, I'm honest about screen time or screen sucking, as our friend Ned Hollowell would call it. There's a lot of screen sucking in my life, you know, be it YouTube or, you know, and often a lot of those things, you know, you kind of justify it by, well, I'm watching podcasts or I'm watching, you know, important thing, not just watching, you know, cat videos. But then I realized, you know, I watch a lot of TikTok and Facebook and YouTube Shorts has been the latest, that you just get into the river of this ever-ending stream of one-minute dopamine hit every with an infinite scroll. And all of a sudden, fill in all of those, look at all the time. You know, I mentioned how the thing about, I was reflecting on verbs and my doing.
Verbs and nouns. And, verbs and
yeah,
nouns.
The verbs. Yeah, yeah. So I'm always, you're always doing something with every minute of the of available time, right? You can't just, you're not just, even nothing is something. Sitting, because you're sitting or standing, and I was playing around with this matrix of the state of the position you're in, like contextually. So we go from a, you know, from a state of lying down or sitting or standing to moving to running kind of thing. You're on the move is one of those, your mobility level. And then on the primary things of the inputs really come from thinking is the least effortful thing, thinking or listening, or watching, or reading, or talking, or drawing, or writing. Those things are all like go from pure, you know, input to output kind of modes. But it was kind of, it wasn't an exhaustive list. I mean, there's certainly everything that I do could fit into those handful context, right? If you overlay all of the activities and then the content fits under those. So what am I thinking about? What am I watching? What am I reading? I'm reading, you know, there's a modifier to it then. And it's kind of an interesting, I like to get, you know, bedrock things, like to see where, what are the edges of things, the boundaries to, you know, set up the constraint that the buckets that everything fits into, and looking to, you know, apply those to the outcomes that.
So what would be an example of a bedrock measurement? What would be an example?
Well, a bedrock. So, I mean, the amount of time that I'm actually just, if you look at those things and you overlay on top of that, this, what never changes is that the mainland, you know, I distinguish the mainland from Cloudlandia in that the mainland is material, real, actual. There's rules, there's science that goes with the mainland. You can be a shapeshifter in Cloudlandia. You can, you're not bound by the rules of or the limitations of the mainland. But on the mainland, the general rule is that it's always moving. It was moving before we got here. It's going to be moving after we're gone. And it's moving at the rate of 60 minutes per hour. That's a foundational bedrock. Nothing that we can do to change that reality that we are moving at the, you know, in time at the rate of 60 minutes per hour. So if you and I are going to record a 60-minute podcast, that has to be executed within the reality of 60 real minutes. Those have to be then positioned as coordinates. If you look at the calendar as the actual coordinates to map what we're doing. So you and I have the least amount of planning or organization or effort required to make this happen, because we have established that Sunday morning at 11 a.m., we're going to meet in Cloudlandia, right? We've established those coordinates. So we've got that locked into place. And we don't have to do any thinking about it unless an outlier situation happens, like this morning. And you emailed and said, can we do 11:30? Right? Had to change the coordinates. We couldn't be in two places at one time. Right? You didn't do what you had to do and be here. So that's a limitation within the construct of the mainland. And this is really coming from, I've been doing some deeper thinking about the applied element of imagine if you applied yourself. You know, so what does the applied mean? Applied is where it's the catalyst thing. You know, it's where everything happens. Everything that takes shape in the mainland is going through this, you know, into the mainland through the time, energy, you know, those verbs that we need to do. And so my list, that was my, you know, I think that if I take that list of thinking, of, you know, thinking, listening, watching, reading, talking, drawing, writing, if I take those are pretty much the toolkit of the input output kind of ratio. And that's what I say about Bedrock. I don't know that there's anything, those contexts, pretty much everything we're doing fits into one of those base contexts. It's like the almost the periodic element of
And I was just thinking of human affairs, you know, both on the personal level and then on the interactive level, you know, two individuals working with each other and then groups and communities and everything else. You're on the success scale. You're either successful or unsuccessful to the degree that you come to grips with 60 minutes an hour.
Yeah. And that's the truth. And the greatest thing, the real leverage within that, there's certain ways that you can advantageously apply those. I mean, there are certain things that you can create. I heard this great concept, J. Conrad Levinson, and I have to give him credit for this, a guy who wrote Guerrilla Marketing. And he wrote a book that was less known, but it was called The 90-Minute Hour. And what he talked about was looking for opportunities where you could blend things to essentially create a 90-minute hour. So if you're looking at things where technologies or combinations that if advanced planning can help you do two things at once, it would be conceivable, for instance, for me to record this podcast, but also be driving to somewhere an hour away from now. And I've essentially doubled the effective. I've gotten the 1 hour of, you know, doing that. There's combinations of things that you could do. You can listen to a podcast while you're driving. You can ride on a treadmill while you're watching YouTube videos. Or it's those 90-minute hour things. And then the other way of multiplying it is by, you know, through automation, but also through other people. That's the real
thing. Who not how?
Who not how is the thing. If you expand your self, to follow our acronym, your sphere, your energy, leadership, and finances, that if you're involving other people, you know, like right now, you've got over 100 employees now?
130
right people. Now. So every business day, you are, you know, you're getting 130 hours per hour. Multiply. Yeah, that's exactly right.
Yeah, well, didn't ask for it, Siri, so, you know, have a good new year.
Oh, that's so funny. But that's, so now it's like, those are really, this is where I'm learning about the applied thing, or, you know, sharpening your thinking around the applied side.
Yeah.
And
I mean, there's
almost like putting those recipes together.
You know, I think that, you know, if you take, let's use a big topic like philosophy, you know, and philosophy, the Greek words translate very loosely into English as the love of wisdom, really what philosophy means. And wisdom is, you know, if you think about it from the standpoint that you're talking about, wisdom is knowing what to do with your time. You know, it's basically, did you know what to do with your time? Did you know what's the best way to use your time? Did you know why it's important to use your time in such a way that it, you know, makes you happy? And so there's you can go down maybe a list of 7 or 8 things. But if you took them all together and said, you know, basically, if you study all the books of philosophy, they're touching on the issue of how does one use one's time, you know. Basically, that's basically what all philosophy is about.
Yeah. And that's exciting. Like that, to me, I'm enjoying this process of, you know, replacing, because I find that infinitely. I think you said something about when you kind of realize that what's going on inside your mind is much better than what's going on inside your television. Right, that's better. I think that's where you said it. I mean, that's
I mean, so, you got to check this. You got to check this out person by person. But you know, I think I would say that was very crucial to my decision not to watch television, because there wasn't anything going on there that was, you know, it was as useful as an hour with me sitting in a room with nothing going on, but just, you know,
thinking about your thinking.
Thinking about my thinking. Lots going on when I'm thinking about my thinking. But anyway, and, you know, I want to bounce 3 things off you. It's the subject of my next book.
Okay.
So I'm closing in on the end of the quarterly book here. So we got January to get it all shaped up and shipped out to the publisher, to the printer. This one that I'm sending out is called Capitalism - and Everything Else, to indicate that a lot of people like to create, there's an equivalency, like there's an ideological shopping market, then there's the capitalism section and the socialism section and the communist section. And it's a silly thought. There is no equivalency. Okay, capitalism, which produces everything good and new, and then there's other systems that oppose capitalism, but they don't produce anything. They simply take what capitalism produces and redistribute it in a highly prejudicial way. You know, in other words, you didn't produce it, but you think that it's not fair that the person who produces it should get all the benefit of it. So we're going to let you produce anything you want, but we're going to take a portion of it, or a very big portion of it, or all of
it,
and we're going to keep it for ourselves, or we're going to give it to people who are deserving of what you produce. And that's the reality of the planet, and it goes back. It's one of those things like time, because production is being productive is very much related to your basic measurement of 60 minutes per hour. You know, the people who are productive and the people who are profitable and the people who are prosperous are the people who do a better job of capitalizing on their 60 minutes per hour than other folks are. You know, it's basically what it is. But I was thinking that with kind of a lot of unsettling things going on in the world right now, unsettling in the sense that people thought things were going to go along one way, and it's turned out they're going along in an unpredictable way. And I think that unsettles people when your expectations are defied by reality. And a couple of things that I think have unsettled people. One is the sudden inflation that's kicked up over the last 2 years. See, and we were supposed to be at a point where at most you'd have 1%, maybe 2% inflation per year, and you could count on that. There would be no inflation. Right. All of a sudden, you know, you're sitting at 6%. And people who have limited income for the rest of their life, that really impacts their life. They get very unsettled by that. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And the other thing is that we weren't supposed to have those kind of, our public health care was supposed to be totally on top of things. And, you know, there were centers for disease control who were supposed to control disease. And it turns out they didn't.
Yeah, we're not full time of pandemic.
Public,
right.
And the public health care system isn't what we thought it was. So that's an unsettling fact. You know, and then there aren't now supposed to never be another war in Europe. And there's another war in Europe, and it's a major one. And, you know, and the FBI are supposed to be the good guys, and now we have a lot of proof that they're not the good guys. At least from my perspective, they're not the good guys for my side. They may be the good guys for somebody else's side. But they're not supposed to be partisan. They're not supposed to be favoring one side. You know. So I just go on. I could go on about 10 or 20 things, and this gets talked about, and it's essentially what the news is. You know, what we call the news, you know, with capital letters, news. That's basically what it is. And I was sitting there about a week ago, and I said, what if none of it means anything?
What if the hokey pokey really is what it's all about?
Yeah, what if none of this really means anything? And it's really, it's just basically the storm, it's just a total mushroom cloud of emotion. You know, it's just kind of, it's just like a tsunami wave. It's like a tsunami wave. And you only get caught by the tsunami if you have those emotions inside of you. Otherwise, it's like nothing's happening. Like, if you don't relate to why other people are emotionally upset, then you're not going to be upset because there's no communication line between their emotions and your emotions. Okay, right. So it's an interesting thing. So I got further thinking and I said, what would be some rules that you would need to be basically feeling really kind of cool and very calm in the storm of other people's negative emotions? What would you be looking for? What would be some rules to do?
I'm not sure I understand.
Well, I know you don't understand. Yeah. But I tell you, you get Siri into any kind of conceptual matters and she's helpless.
Right.
You know, she's just helpless with context. And I'm saying that so it's recorded at Cupertino. And
there you go. Perfect.
Anyway, Siri, why is Apple still in China? Could you talk to some people there?
I can't.
There you go. She's at least rehearsed it. Anyway, I'm going to throw my watch. I'm just going to throw it across the room. I threw it under the couch.
There you go. Perfect.
I'm out of ear range for her. Anyway, the three rules I came up with, and, you know, I'm just introducing these, are everything's made up. Rule number one is everything is made up.
I like that a lot. It's true.
Okay. Number two is nobody's in charge.
Yes. Everything is made
up. I'm not saying there aren't people who think they're in charge. I'm just saying that nobody actually is in charge.
Yeah.
And let me just remember the number three here. I have to go over my notes on this.
My goodness. It reminds me of that show, Whose Line Is It Anyway? That was on television. And they always, the show where everything's made up and the points don't matter.
Yeah.
That's kind of what you're, everything is made up. No one's in control or no one's in.
No one's in charge. Not in control. There are people who are kind of in control. In other words, they can keep you from doing certain things or they can force you to do certain things, but they're not really in charge. You know, like you're not really buying into, you know, their authority. You're not really buying into their position. You're not really buying into that. And there was a third one. If you don't mind, I'm gonna do a new
thing.
I
love it.
Gonna walk upstairs because I want to get that. I want to get that third thing.
Yeah, I do too.
Yeah, I'm walking up the stairs. Okay, I'm now at ground level. Okay, Babs is peeling vegetables.
Okay.
I'm just going to grab my computer and bring it down. Good lesson for the future. Always bring your computer down. Yeah, but the first
two
are...
Going so far, though. I was just going to say, I really like where it's going so far. That is the truth, you know. And it kind of parallels what I was thinking about these contextual things. Like, I had that realization from the Shangri-La Hotel in London, looking down at all the ants, all the people marching in the same direction, and realize, you know, when you take out the sound and you just look at the mechanical things, there's very few things. We're doing all the same thing. If you just observe, we're walking, we're sitting, we're standing, we're talking, we're looking at a screen. All of those things are the physical, you know, mechanical things that we're doing, but what brings them to life is the content of it. And that's all really made up in our heads, you know?
Yeah. I got rule number three. Okay, so rule number one is everything's made up. Rule number two is nobody's in charge. And rule number three is life isn't fair.
That is true. Those are all great.
Yeah, and if you can kind of own those, you know, to a certain extent, you can take those inside. And when things happen, you say, well, first of all, remember everything that's being discussed here was made up by somebody. You know, I mean, somebody may have been a couple thousand years ago, but it was made up. And you realize all sorts of stuff are being made up today, some of it in competition with things that were made up thousands of years ago. So there's a certain level of competition about this, you know, especially around the topic of truth, you know, topic of reality. Well, what's reality? And I said, well, you know, that 60 minutes per hour, there is a reality to it, but you have to realize that one time it was made up.
Yeah, that's true, right? That is true. There was it existed. It was there, you know, just the cadence of it, though. I mean, the rhythm was certainly there. The observable, hey, the sun disappears every night, and then it comes up again every morning behind me. It appears in front of me, it comes up behind. Where'd the sun go? Oh, there it is. Oh, wait a minute, that happened again. Hey, wait a minute, at noon, it seems like it's right over top of, I mean, it's amazing to me where we've come, you know, from just like observing the things around us, right? Everything that we take for granted now has come from the realization by other people thinking about their thinking that, hey, wait a minute, that sun seems to go on a path from the east to the west, and it let's call that a day. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, yeah. That's something, right? When you look at, if we were to measure it, how long does it take to go?
Yeah, and
made up.
Know, the thing was that people said, well, you know, how do we actually measure what happens between one sunrise and one sunset, you know? And they said, and they had various ways that they looked around to do it. And, you know, one of them, you know, and they had to advance quite a bit before they could do what I'm going to now talk about. But they say, well, let's have candles and we'll burn a candle and we'll have measurements on the candle. And it looks like it sort of burns down at a constant pace here every time it goes down. And then they'd get some sort of rough handle, you know. They could do it at Midsummer's Day when the, you know, the time between sunrise and sunset is the longest. And they would do it just a week ago when, you know, at Midwinter's Day when it's at its shortest. And they'd work out tables, you know. And but think of all the other things, the other kind of tools that they had to create to get a handle on just one.
Yeah, and how long it took. I wonder what the history of time is. That'd be an interesting Chat GPT session.
Yeah. Well, the Romans really didn't have it, you know. So they were very mm-hmm. advanced. They had sundials. You know, that was the best they had.
Yeah.
I think they had some form of sand dial too, you know, with, you know, you have two vessels and one of them's got a hole in the bottom and you fill the one up with sand and then it leaks out the bottom and goes into the other one and they takes up. But you need something that you can already measure with to create some new measurement, you know. And even now with atomic clocks, you know, which they're based on, you know, the deterioration of a atom. I looked it up a couple of years ago, but there's a clock. There's one clock in the world. It's in the United States, I think, where it keeps track of all the time in the world. And so, you know, but it's not exact. And every, you know, 5 years, 6 years, they have to add a second or deduct a second, you know, then everybody's time.
Yeah, you ever wonder how they keep, how that stuff gets made up, you know?
Yeah, well, it is made up. Yeah, somebody made it up. I mean, it was like the railroad time, you know, for the, you know, was necessary because the locomotives had been created. And they were using single tracks between cities where you would have, you know, trains leaving the city more or less at the same time, but coming in opposite directions. And if one of them didn't go off to a sidetrack at a certain point, you were going to have a collision. And in the early railroad days, they had a lot of collisions. And so they had to create, that was a Canadian actually who created the global railroad time.
Is that right? Those Canadians.
Yeah. And, you know, in the mid-1800s, you know, 1850s, 18, I think it was established at one of the world fairs, you know, in the late 1800s, because they had those world fairs they had back then. It was to introduce new scientific and technological breakthroughs when everybody mm-hmm. could come together in one place, anything else. But I just looked at, you know, I was just looking at my three rules for staying calm and cool of everything's made up. So the moment you hear something, you say, I don't know if I accept that or not, but I do accept the fact that somebody made it up. Okay.
And I acknowledge that somebody made that up.
I acknowledge that somebody made that up, but it kind of contradicts something else that I hold on to, which also someone made up. So it's a choice of which made up I'm going to accept here. And I think that relaxes you.
Just acknowledge that, hey, it's all made up. So this is the best. I mean, 400 years ago, people thought the earth was flat. And some still do.
Yeah. I don't know why they thought that, though, because it's very clear that, it, you know, if you get up on any kind of height, there's very clearly that the when you get to the horizon, it sort of curves. it sort of curves around. Yeah. And I don't know why, you know, I don't know. Yeah. I wonder who made that up, that the world was flat, that it supposedly people believed in it.
You know, yeah, people,
but it shows you where the thought goes.
People who didn't climb mountains. That's it.
Yeah. People were born in. Yeah, but my feeling is that what it does is that it relaxes you a little bit, and you say, well, you know, I feel strongly about this, but I do have to acknowledge that I'm believing strongly about something that somebody made up. And if you ask me who that was or what the history of it is, I'm not in a position to tell you right now. So that lessens the power of my outrage that you're suggesting. You're making up something now that contradicts what I made up. So, and the other thing is, nobody's in charge. In other words, there isn't anyone you can go to whose opinion about where things come from is going to be any better than yours.
And what was the third one? So everything is made up. No one's
life's
in charge.
Life's not fair. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, so there's nothing that you're born into that is fair. You know, when we're born, there's nothing fair. There's nothing fair. Nothing was designed for you with you in mind. Nothing was made up with you in mind.
Yeah. That's so funny.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm just playing with them. They're like rules of geometry. They're like the geometry of staying calm and cool.
This is, you know, Dan Euclid Sullivan's view of the universe.
Yeah, this is,
I mean,
the
Euclid
triangle.
Had to make these things up. Euclid made it up.
Well, he was a great aggregator of, I think, everything that other people had made up. I don't think that Euclid was an original math creator.
Documenter? Was he the documenter?
He was an aggregator. He gathered everything and organized it and put it into a system. And in one case, he showed that there's a sequential system. That, you know, I mean, proposition number one is divide a straight line into two parts. Mm-hmm. The first proposition of all mathematical genius. So what you do is you draw a straight line, okay, which is, you know, it's in the sand or it's on a piece of parchment or anything. You draw a straight line, and then to divide it in half, you take a compass, you know, a compass, not a compass for discovering the North Pole, but a compass for drawing a circle.
Circumference, yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah, circle, and you put the you put the point of the compass in one end of the line, and you take it out further than half of the line, and then you draw a curved line above it, and you do the same thing on the other side, and you draw a curved line, and now you have an intersection of two lines. And then you do the same thing underneath the line, and then you have. And then you draw a straight line between the two points, and that divides the line into two parts. And that's the start of all geometric mathematics in the world. There you go.
Interesting how it came from, you know, that was his thinking about his thinking. I wonder how long it took for him to, you know, come up with that. But you imagine, like, I'd love to see, you know, a kind of dramatization of Euclid's discoveries in the modern, you know, if he was in modern. Where
yeah,
is he sitting in a chair? Is he? Yeah.
Actually, they think the Library of Alexandria, that it was a sort of a, it was a big library where all the scrolls were. But they had like conferences there, and they had tutorials and classrooms, and, you know, people came and discussed new things that they had discovered, and it was sort of a collecting point. I think it was sort of the Google of the age, and you know, and he was a mathematician, a Greek, I think, but the Greeks traveled far and wide in the Mediterranean world, and this is where he situated himself, and there's not much known about him except that he did exist, and he was acknowledged at the time of being someone knowledgeable about mathematical principles. Yeah.
That's
so
amazing.
He's as good. People say, well, you know, how do we know that Euclid started all this? And I said, somebody made it up.
You're right, exactly. Is that all part of your this new capitalism and everything else book?
No, this is the next book.
No, okay.
This is the next book. So I'm just starting in on this. And
what is the next one called? Everything is made up and the points don't matter?
No, it's I've just changed the name, actually, because of our conversation here. Geometry of Staying Calm and Cool.
Okay, I like that. Oh, that's good.
Yeah, yeah. And it's because it's very clear to me that just feeling something and expressing yourself doesn't really increase your ability to get a handle on 60. There's 60 minutes in an hour. Anything can impact you from the outside, and you have no control over your reactions to things from the outside. I just don't think you're going to make very much progress as a person, and you're not going to get much done.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty. Is that how far out do you book your quarterly books?
One quarter.
You've got a hopper,
when I'm getting close,
and you kind of go
I'm
to the hopper.
Close, yeah. Yeah, I have a file and I have 30 possibilities, but usually they stay in that file because they were worth writing in the file, but they weren't worth getting out of the file and actually doing something out of it. But I don't feel wasting time or anything like that, you know, so you write it down.
I saw a profile of Woody Allen years ago, and, you know, it showed his process. He writes ideas down. He writes, like, you know, synopsis or scene ideas of movie titles, ideas on yellow pads, and he just stuffs them in a drawer, and then, you know, when it's time, basically makes one movie a year for 50 years now or whatever. And when it's time, he goes in the drawer and he looks out and picks out one and, okay, that's the one. And then he goes to work on writing and exploring that one.
Yeah.
Pretty interesting.
I mean, I get a sense, you know, of everything that's happening in my experience of the clients in the workshops. And, you know, so, and I get a sense of what kind of thinking tools might be useful for the next quarter. And then I've got the relationship with Ben Hardy about, you know, a big book.
I just got my 10 times is easier than 2 times.
The galley, you got the galley proof. Yeah.
I got the galley. Yeah. Thank you. So that's awesome.
Yeah.
What's your next?
So everybody, we send it out to, I think we send it out to everybody in Free Zone in 10 times. We sent this out, the galley proof. And, and then we ask people to, because it's already up on Amazon, you know, you can pre-order it. Amazon.
Yeah.
But we ask people to put up a review, because that helps. That helps with the pre-order. Yeah, gotten some good stuff. There's a couple thousand that have already been pre-ordered, which is great. And
what's next?
Yeah.
You got the next one already?
Yeah, we hold off on that. Ben gets eager. Ben would like to have the, you know, he would like to be a little bit further ahead with that. And I think Hay House would too. But, you know, our big thing is to capitalize the eggs that are about to be laid, not, you know, a future chicken.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
That's good.
I mean, we'll get to it when we get to it. Yeah, because they have a production year and everything. And we're doing it this year in May instead of, if it had been on normal schedule, it would have happened 2 months ago in October. But there has been a huge supply chain problems for paper. Paper shortages in the United States. And so they had some commitments of, you know, that they had to, you know, that they had to take care of books that were in production and had a prior deadline to ours. So they wanted to guarantee that they could do justice to those other books. Mm-hmm. And so they asked us, but I actually like May a little bit better than October. I think it's...
Well, our birthdays are in May, yeah.
Well, I was looking for the reason, and you just defined it.
Yep. That's it. Both of our birthdays in May. That's right.
Yeah. You're the 9th? Are you the 9th?
I'm May 10th, yes.
Yeah, well, actually, the release day is the day before your birthday this year.
Okay, all right.
Yeah.
That's a good thing.
Yeah. But anyway, this is really interesting. And, you know, the interesting things, and people often ask, you know, what is the intent of your podcast with Dean Jackson? This is called Land the Unthing. What is, you know, what's your strategy here? What are each of you and both of you together trying to achieve? And I said, I haven't given that much thought. I'll have to bring the topic up with Dean.
There we go.
I'm clueless. I can't think of any intent whatsoever. That's why we're doing this.
It's one of those, you know, the value is in the doing of it. It's really, I think, it's one of my...
The activity is its own reward.
That's exactly what it is for me. And it's so funny that you say that, though, because every now and then, but not every now and then, I mean, almost every week, I'll have people say, you know, I was just listening to you and Dan. Somebody was saying they were driving somewhere and they went back. They started like on episode 1 of Welcome to Cloudlandia. And he said, in episode 3, you know, you guys, and I forget what it was, Dan, but we were talking about something that he was like, that was a really like sound shift for me. And I think it's a great thing that the comments that I get are that people, it's, you know, gets them thinking about their thinking.
Yeah, I think the big thing is that I think that it is important, especially for your practical life, that you do have periods of time and you have particular type of interactions where there is a particular result that you have to achieve and you have to achieve it by a particular deadline. And it's got a economic consequence. Okay, I'm clear about that. Okay. But I keep that within the framework of strategic coach activities. Okay, that are related to our program. You know, everything comes down to the program. But then one of the rewards you get for doing that well is that you get all sorts of time where you don't have to impose those requirements on your time.
Yes. And then I think that by the things that you choose to do.
Unpurposeful time.
Yes. And then, but I think ultimately then that shapes the thinking of that you bring into the things that have that commercial intent or the way you were just describing it there. Because I think about, you know, the seeds of the things that we talked about with the joy of procrastination, you know, even starting all the way back when we first had that, the very first conversation there. There's a lot of seeds of thoughts that have really developed into other things, which is kind of I like that a lot.
Yeah.
It's a wonderful, like, I honestly, the part of the thing is, it's one of the selfish joys, too, that I find it very useful, just even personally, you know, having these conversations with you every week has been a delight.
Yeah. Yeah, well, we're both reporting on our wanderings, you know. This is where I wandered last week, you know, and it's kind of neat. Otherwise, you know, you can get lost in your own wanderings if you don't have a period of time where you can kind of bounce it off somebody else's wanderings. You know, it's one of those things. And I think that I think the value of this has lessened in my lifetime. You know, if I go back to the 40s and 50s, you know, and I mean, in my life, first of all, it was a pretty easygoing life, if I remember it accurately. It moved at the speed of the one traffic light that we had in our local town. And to this day, that town has one traffic light. There's, you know, yeah, there's only one traffic light.
Uh-huh. There's Go something ahead, to yeah. that, though. I think about that all the way back to the 80s, too, right? Like, in the analog world, there was no way, really, of shaping, you know, we talk about from 1950 to 80, there's basically very little change that your consumption of things was real time and synchronous. There was no way of, you know, even when you look at things like the answering machine for your telephone was one of the first things where you could be two places in one time. You could be wherever you wanted to be, but still get that important call if you needed it. And then the VCR allowing you mm-hmm. to be doing something else, but also capturing what you wanted, added in some asynchronous element to what we're doing. Mm-hmm. But now, you know, fast forward now, and nothing has to be synchronous, really. Core things do, but, you know, as far as like choice and when things happen, if you wanted to watch Gunsmoke, you had to be in front of the TV on Sunday night or whenever Gunsmoke was on, or the whatever television show you wanted. There was no other option but to organize your calendar and your day around being there at that time. And you watched whatever one of the three choices were that mm-hmm. night. You know, for that mm-hmm. happened literally until we got up to 13 channels, right? Mm-hmm. In the 70s, we had 13 channels, and some of them were, you know, one was French, one was the government, and one was, you know, not working. So you had to choose between, you maybe had seven or eight choices, right? Three of them were Buffalo stations and the CBC and Global Television and yep. the yep. Kitchener channel.
CTV,
yeah, yeah. So you have those, and
you know, at yeah. 10 o'clock or 12 o'clock, depending when, the national anthem played.
Yes.
Yeah. They said, good night.
Yeah.
You know, and they now, opened, you know, like, what, I was six. I don't know when in the morning they started again, maybe six or so. Yeah. But, you know, they were obeying timeless, you know, the time schedule of antiquity, you know, like.
Right, that's
you know,
it.
When, yeah. Yeah, it's an interesting thing. And somebody made that up, you know, somebody made that up.
Yeah.
It's just one of the things that you pointed out is that when television first started, the first visual would be screens open, you know, the curtains opening, you know, like
right.
you'd
yeah.
have. Yeah. And they were saying, you know, how do we make a presentation? Well, it's uh-huh. you know, people are used to the curtains opening, so we have to have the curtains opening, you know. You know, and that was a standard sort of, or the you know, and then they, in the movie business, they, you know, started to create corporate logos like the MGM lion.
Right.
You know, the lion roaring, or the, you know, 20th Century Fox had the
yeah.
Art Deco, ta-da, sort of Art Deco.
Yeah.
Universal had the planet, and they had, yeah. But it's very interesting. But things that you're, when you're born, things that are already made up seem timeless to you.
Yeah.
And well, the reason is nobody told you that the thing that you were watching or experiencing had been made up. You know, they themselves may not have known that.
I like it.
Yeah.
Well,
I mean,
a
well, it's an interesting one because I think that calms you down a bit. It just calms you down. And you just said,
yeah.
well, you know, and it probably, the thing that was, it, when it was made up, it was to replace something that wasn't as good or didn't have as many voters or didn't have as many buyers, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know. Yeah, and you know, it was really funny because one of the topics that was discussed at the time of the U.S. Constitution was, would there be a national language?
Mm.
In other words, and the reason was there were a sufficient number of people who spoke German in the
okay.
country at that time. That people said, well, you know, are we going to be a two-language country? I mean, where have you ever heard that? I mean, what a nonsensical notion, right, Dean?
That's
that you would have
crazy.
I mean, think of all the difficulties you run into when you make up a country with two official languages. You know, I mean, boy, I mean, that'd be hard to negotiate.
Oh, boy.
But that was something that had to be negotiated. And, you know, and they had all the considerations because most of the colonies started with an established religion. Yeah, you know, Episcopalian, which is Anglican, and then there was, you know, Catholic Maryland. The colony of Maryland was a Catholic colony, and then you had Puritans in Massachusetts, and the Friends, which are the Quakers in Pennsylvania, and you had all these, and they had deep roots. They had deep roots. You know, by the time you got to the Constitution, they'd been 100 years, 150 years. Mm. And so there was that to be taken account. And then the Constitution was made up. And it was made up by cutting and pasting from 13 other constitutions, each of the colonies had a constitution that were made up, you know.
Uh-huh.
And a lot of this stuff came from British examples of made-up constitutions. And, you know, but after a while, you know, something works and people kind of say, okay, let's not fool around with it.
Let's stick with this.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, there's challenges I'm seeing right now that if one of the political parties in the United States starts getting disadvantaged by the Electoral College, they say, okay, this is a 18th century white slave owner system, and everything else. And the reason is that their numbers are starting to dip down. They're noticing because every 10 years there's a census. And in the United States, and somebody made that up.
When did
somebody
that
made
start?
That up? But they also made up a rule that when you get the census, you take the total number and you divide by 435. Okay.
For what?
Well, that gives you the average number of people that makes up a congressional district.
Oh, I got you. Okay, right.
Because there's only 435 congressional seats.
I see. Okay, right.
You know why?
I didn't know that. Okay. No, why?
Because in the building called the House of Congress in Washington, that's all the number of people you can fit.
Oh, I love it. That is funny.
And in 1927, they put an amendment in the Constitution that you could only have 435 seats in Congress. So Hawaii and Alaska, at that time, they were at about 48 states. I think that they pretty much reached 48. Then in the 50s, they had Alaska and Hawaii were added. And then they had to take some seats away from other states to give Hawaii. I think both of them, when they started, just had one. I think Alaska only has one Congress.
Wow,
they've got
so
two
is that
senators.
Why, do they do, and then do they redraw the lines every 10 years?
Well, yeah, if there's more than one seat, then yeah, they redraw them, and the power of that goes to the state legislatures. So the state legislatures are the ones who redraw the laws in their state, which is totally 100% prejudicial because Republicans redraw the lines to favor them and Democrats redraw the lines. And people say, well, this is absurd. Why do we have this at all? Why don't we just have the total population, everybody gets to vote, you know? Mm. And I said, well, there's problems with that too, you know?
Yeah.
And why do you have to be a citizen to be able to vote, you know?
Oh, boy.
And why can't 10-year-olds vote?
Everything affects them,
They've
too.
Got an iPhone. They've got an iPhone. Why can't they vote?
Yes. Yes.
You know,
I think that's the secret. So. Everybody, one iPhone, one vote. Yeah. Just tell Siri what you want to do.
See, I've solved the Siri problem. Just throw the phone under
the couch. Yeah, I love it.
Yeah. I think she's lonely.
Oh, man. I wonder if she notices that you're...
No, she doesn't. Well, if she would be bothered, it wouldn't make me want to take my phone off and throw it under, because then you can negotiate. But there's no negotiating.
Oh, I got it.
I mean, what a cop-out. I mean, what's the thing of Apple still being in China? And she says, any questions related to Apple Corporation, please?
Oh, that's so funny.
Yeah.
She's been trained.
Come on, Siri. You're supposed to be intelligent. You got to have a view here.
Party line.
Yeah. Yeah. That's another one, you know, that China was going to take over the 21st century. Another expectation, and you know, and I think a lot of people.
It turns out you were right about that. You were right. I often tell people your observation that anywhere where 2 hours from a capital city, people are shitting in a hole.
Shitting in a hole in the ground.
Your competition. That's not your competition.
Yeah, no, that would definitely be true.
It is true. Absolutely.
Yeah, still would be the case, yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, they have a history of not holding the country together, and it goes back 4,000 years or so. And the period we're in right now, since 1949, when the communist government took over, is the longest stable period, peaceful period, and fairly prosperous period in Chinese history. And it's coming apart. And it's coming apart. And the reason is it's an almost impossible country to hold together. You know, and, you know, the North and the South have zero to do with each other. I mean, they speak a different language, you know, Mandarin and what's the other one? Cantonese and Mandarin. You know, they speak two different languages. And then, and you've got coastal Chinese from, there's a big, you know, the big river outlet that goes into where Shanghai is. And if you start with Shanghai, come out to the coast and go south around to Beijing, that's a totally different China. That China relates to the world, that's related to the world forever. Don't have virtually nothing to do culturally with people in Beijing, you know, and don't really like each other, don't say good things about each other.
Almost like Democrats and Republicans.
Yeah. So anyway, so plus they just stopped having children 40 years ago, and the children they did have were all boys. And that causes problems.
Yeah. Yeah, that is interesting to see those population charts and where what the coming impact of that is going to be.
Yeah. You need lots of women to have lots of children, and they don't have marriages. Yeah. I mean, and a lot of the adoptions, you know, there were adoptions where people foreigners. I knew a man when I started coach in the 90s, and he was from Indianapolis, and he and his wife had just adopted twin girls from China.
My good friend Lane has two boys from China.
That's surprising, and the reason is that they didn't allow the boys to be adopted. You know, they allowed the girls to be adopted. And I said, you know, you're not looking long range here.
Right, exactly.
Men are expendable. Women are not expendable.
But as far as if your importance is to carry on your
One man and 100 women can create a civilization.
There you go.
Yeah. One woman and 100 men means that you just have a very tired woman by Friday.
A tired man. Yes, exactly. That's funny.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah. What'd you get? What'd we get in our wanderings?
Well, we got our three
wanderings here.
I think we established the pace of mainland at 60 minutes per hour. That's one, and the context of the movement and doing. And then everything is made up, and nobody's in charge. And the third, hang on now, let me get the third back. I'm not going to beat myself
up. Life's not fair.
Because life's not fair. because you had to go and get the notes.
Yeah,
life
is
unfair.
Yeah, it doesn't mean that life is mean. It's just that fairness is a internal judgment that we make about things that are outside of us. And nature, you know, life is not really controlled by our internal judgments.
Yeah.
I mean, we can make things fair. I mean, I think humans do a really good job with people that they know and the situation they live in. They create something called fairness, but it's made up.
Yeah.
I mean, look at the rules of sports. You know, the rules of sports are, we have, I mean, we're finely tuned with our games that the game's only worth playing if there's an agreement that of what fair play means.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I love these contextual conversations.
Yeah.
This is good. I'm going to keep going on
the way, Karen Skorick, my emissary to Florida, you know, the diplomat to Florida, and through your good graces, she was able to go to the studio, and they treated her wonderfully.
I saw her.
They treated her wonderfully, and she learned a lot, and we have a trove of useful tips on creating our next, you know, studios, because we get to start from fresh. And,
that's exactly right.
Yeah,
and Juan offered he'd be happy to consult or to share whatever.
Yeah,
be a resource for you if you need questions answered or anything.
Yeah,
so it's great.
All righty.
Okay, Dan. Happy
I'll
New
talk
Year.
To you next week. Next week, I'm in Chicago for Free Zone. So I do the Free Zone workshop on the Tuesday, and
we're doing
and
this.
So I have a new 10 times coach on the Monday. There's Lee Brower Lee Brower is the coach on Monday. So
And then we have virtual Free Zone coming up too.
We have virtual and 12th, then you'll be at the summit. You'll be at
That's
the summit.
That's exactly right.
And I have a fast filter to outline your thinking that you're going to share with us about, you know, things Cloudlandia.
Okay. I like it. I like what I'm hearing.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. Well, thanks, Dan. I'll be here next week.
Okay, great. Thanks. Bye.
Thanks. Bye.